Hockey is a fast-paced and physical sport, and so is sled hockey.
Here by Shikov. He is quick for Team Russia. Shikov has the puck. He cuts out front, tried to jam at the short side, and Cash made the save. And bodies everywhere here.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with Andy Yoey and Kevin McKee, two Iowans who are headed to Sochi to compete in sled hockey at the Paralympic Games. Later this hour, we'll talk about other adaptive sports in Iowa and how opportunities for disabled athletes have grown in the state. I'll talk with Mike Boone, founder and director of Adaptive Sports Iowa, and Nick Bassett, a student athlete who lives near Boone. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The eyes of the world are on the world-class athletes competing in Sochi right now. But at this moment, there's a whole different group of world-class athletes gearing up for the biggest competition of their lives. The Sochi 2014 Paralympic Winter Games begin on March 7th. And with me today are two Iowans who'll be competing as members of the USA Sled Hockey Paralympic team, a team that brought home the gold in Vancouver.
The gold medal game, well, once again, they're up 3-0. Explosion here in this latter stages of the first period. A chance in front and a goal for Team USA off what seemed to be a harmless carom.
That sound from the documentary Ice Warriors, USA Sled Hockey, that premieres on PBS on February 24th at 9 p.m. Both of my guests today are featured in that documentary. Andy Yoey is from Bettendorf, and he was on that gold medal team that competed in 2010. He's the captain of USA Sled Hockey. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin McKee is from Davenport, and this will be his first Paralympics, although he was a member of the U.S. national sled hockey team that won a silver medal in the 2013 World Championship in South Korea. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And Andy, I want to start with you. I know that you were in an accident in 1994 and you lost both of your legs. Before that accident, were you an athlete?
Yes, I played a lot of traveling roller hockey actually before I was injured. And I also I played all sorts of sports when I was a kid. I love trying a little bit of everything, so.
When you had your accident, how old were you?
I was 16.
16 years old. And after that happened, you were in a wheelchair. What did you think about with athletics? Did you think you'd ever be able to do any of those things you'd enjoyed again?
Well, at first, you know, I wasn't interested even participating in any athletics. I thought that anything, any disabled sports was going to be slower and, you know, not the greatest athletes. And once I finally gave it a shot, I found out just how competitive disabled sports are and how many people are out there working hard every day to be the best at their sport. So I found it to be really competitive and a lot of fun.
What was the first adaptive sport that you tried?
Wheelchair basketball.
And what convinced you to give it a try?
A combination of my family and just needing to find something to a release for all my competitive energy that I had.
Tell me about that first experience with wheelchair basketball. What was it like?
It was definitely eye-opening just to see the different athletes out there and to just find out how much fun it was to still try to just compete in a sport and try to be the best player that you can be, just like you would at any other sport.
When did you first try adaptive hockey?
It was in 2003, right after the guys, the sled hockey team won gold in Salt Lake City. A few of them had come to the Quad Cities to put on a demonstration, and I went there and met some of the guys and heard about their story and got out on the ice and found it to be just as exciting as when I'd been on the ice, you know, before I had my accident. So, actually, Kevin was there that day. So there was a lot of cool things happened that day.
Well, and Kevin, let's talk a little bit about your story. Andy was a teenager when he became disabled, but this is something that you've lived with all of your life. You were born with a spinal deformity. Have you been in a wheelchair your whole life?
Yeah, I've been in a wheelchair my entire life, and I've played disabled sports. I played wheelchair basketball growing up in high school, and then I played foot hockey. My dad found it when I was 10, and we had a local team back home, and I just played it there more for recreational. And then when I got older, I got a little bit better, and I got asked to play with the team from the St. Louis area, and I went to the Disabled Festival with them and got recognized kind of by some USA coaches and played on the junior team, and then played on that team for 3 years, and then I made the national team in 2011.
How old are you now?
I'm 24.
All right. Growing up in a wheelchair, what did it mean to you to be able to play sports?
It was just something that stood me. It was a great opportunity for me to just be like any other kid and be able to play sports. So it was good for me, and I say it was the reason why I am who I am today.
The opportunities in adaptive sports have been growing considerably over the past several decades. And you growing up, you had a lot of opportunities that kids who came before you did not have. Did you feel like there were plenty of opportunities, or was this something that you and your family really had to seek out?
Yeah, I mean, I think when they started the program in Iowa, it really helped a lot of kids to be able to play sports, because back in the Quad Cities, there's not a whole lot of disabled sports. It's grown in the past probably 6 or 7 years, I would say. But the team back home really gave, like I said, kids options to play something. And if it wasn't for that, then I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
You're 24 now, so if we look back at 2003 at that exhibition with the gold medal hockey team from Salt Lake City, you would have been 13 or 14 years old. What do you remember about that day?
I just remember watching all those guys and how fast they were and how much hitting there was in the game. And being able to sit on the bench watching those guys play, it was just like something I wanted to do in my life. And now I'm fortunate enough to be going to the Paralympics, and it was a dream of mine, and I can't wait to go.
You mentioned all the hitting out there, and it is a really physical game, no matter what kind of hockey you're playing. That was appealing to you? You thought that looked like fun?
Yeah, I mean, any other sport I've played, like basketball and stuff, there wasn't as much contact, and that was just something that caught my eye, I guess, and I just liked about the game, and I wanted to do it.
And Andy, I know in interviews you've mentioned that you like hitting people too. Was that something that was appealing to you as well?
Yeah, it's my favorite part of the game. And I enjoy being hit as much as I like to hit other people. So it's a great way to release some energy out there. You know, there's no other real venue for that kind of stuff. And it's definitely a physical game. And if you're not prepared for that, then it's probably not a game for you. But it's a lot of fun.
Being in a wheelchair, does that make people usually gentle with you all the time? Is that part of the appeal of getting out there and really getting physical with people?
Yeah, because people always want to help you in the chair and stuff like that. And this way you're more, I guess, like independent and just able to go out there and just be a normal person.
How about you, Andy?
I actually walk around. I'm not in a wheelchair at all anymore. So I was only in a wheelchair for probably 6 months after my accident, and I've been walking around ever since. So I don't have quite the same experience with that, but definitely just being a disabled person, yeah, it's a little bit different.
Andy, can you describe for us how sled hockey is played?
Basically, it's the same as hockey. There's the same positions exist. You play in the same sheet of ice. Most of the rules are all still the same. And the difference is that we're sitting in a sled that's about 6 inches to 12 inches off the ice with 2 hockey blades underneath of it. And you propel yourself with 2 sticks that are about 3 feet long. And there's a right and a left-handed stick with hockey blades on each one side, and on the other end of them there are picks that you drive into the ice to propel yourself.
All right, so that's how you move around, but it's also how you hit the puck.
Correct.
Those sleds that you're on sound like they could be deadly in a collision with each other. Is that a real danger? Not to mention you're holding ice picks at the same time. It seems like the equipment could really hurt the other players.
Yeah, and we all wear, the same kind of padding that hockey players wear, shoulder pads, elbow pads, gloves, shin guards, and helmets with cages on them. And so you have a little bit of protection, but you're right, going that fast and hitting the boards and then having people hit you with their sleds and is definitely a real risk factor. And then also people driving their picks into your stomach or other parts of your body is definitely a lot of injuries happen from that too. But it's part of the game, you know, just like hockey, it's dangerous.
Now, you played a lot of roller hockey before. Do you use goals that are exactly the same as regular hockey?
Yes.
So the goals have a lot more headroom. You guys are a lot closer to the ground. How does that change being a goalie and the ability to actually get a puck in the net?
You would not believe how great our goalies are. They are able to cover the entire net, and it's really challenging to still score a goal in sled hockey because the goalies are very good at what they do. So it is the same. There's a little bit more room, but it's still really challenging. They're good at what they do.
How do your speeds on the ice compare to regular hockey?
It's a little slower. I mean, it's definitely slower than like an NHL game. There's no doubt about that. But that's the first thing that most people are so surprised about is how fast it really is. We really are moving pretty quick out there. You can definitely Google any USA-Canada sled hockey game and check out and see what the speeds are like out there.
Now, you mentioned that exhibition back in 2003 with the athletes from Salt Lake City. Andy, is that the first time you thought, hey, maybe I could go to the Olympics?
Yeah, definitely. And it was the first time I'd gotten out there and to see that I really still just enjoyed the aspect of the game. You know, no matter if I was standing or sitting in a sled, it was still the same kind of feeling out there.
Now, the sled hockey is a fairly young sport. It was founded in the 1960s. Do you feel like it's still evolving?
Yeah, it's been growing a lot, and especially in the U.S., you know, a lot of it has to do with gold medals won. The more success a country has at a sport, it seems like it really grows a lot more in that country. People also want an opportunity to win that gold medal.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back in just a moment. I'm talking to Andy Yowie, who's from Bettendorf. He is the captain of Team USA sled hockey. They're going to the Paralympic Games in Sochi here in the very near future. Kevin McKee is also with us. He is from Davenport. This will be his first Paralympics. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with two athletes who are preparing to go to the Paralympics in Sochi. The Paralympics begin on March 7th, and we have with us Andy Yowie from Bettendorf. He already has a gold medal from the 2010 Paralympics in Vancouver, and he is the captain of the USA sled hockey team. Also with us is Kevin McKee, who grew up in Davenport. This will be his first Paralympics. He's also a member of the sled hockey team, and he was a member of the U.S. national sled hockey team that won a silver medal at the 2013 World Championships in South Korea. Kevin, when did it first occur to you that you might be able to become an Olympian?
When I was in high school, I started playing a lot more and playing on more competitive teams and getting stronger, and I just kept going to the tryouts and felt like I could play with those guys and just kept working hard and eventually made the team after the 2010 team and made it in 2011.
And you actually moved to Chicago to be able to pursue your ambitions in sled hockey. What took you to Chicago?
I moved to Chicago because there's a bigger program in Chicago sponsored by the Blackhawks called the RIC Blackhawks. And they get a lot of ice time and they can play in club tournaments a lot more than my team back home, so I wanted to go there and thought if I played a little bit more, I'd have a better chance of making the team.
So really, this has been a goal that you've been really intensely pursuing for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I've been pretty much dedicating my whole life to it. Besides, I've been going to school also and working, but the last 5 years, just been training and working hard and playing on the club team to make this dream happen.
How many hours do you spend on the ice every week?
I'm usually on the ice 3 or 4 times a week when I'm back home. Our club team practices twice a week, and then I practice 2 other times by myself. And so about 4 or 5 hours, I would say, a week.
Andy, when did you first get involved in world-class sled hockey competition?
After I had seen that demonstration in 2003, I also started playing for the RAC Blackhawks that next season. And after one season with them, I decided to try out for the U.S. team and made it in 2005. And so I competed in the Paralympics in 2006. And after 2010, I retired and came back this year for another run at the Paralympics.
All right. That retirement didn't last very long.
No, I definitely, it's kind of something special when you develop a relationship with your teammates, and you know, it's kind of like a family, like my brothers, and so it's they're all over the country, so you never get to see them unless you're on the team. So coming back to be able to have this experience again with those guys is really something special.
And you came back, and you didn't just come back; you came back, and now you're captain of the team. How did that happen?
I was captain in 2010, so I definitely really respect these guys, and really, you know, I'm the old man on the team, so it's just been second nature to me. So
now you've already been at one Paralympics, as I mentioned. Your team won gold at the Paralympics in Vancouver. What was it like to go into that hockey stadium? Had you been watching the Olympics for the 2 weeks leading up to the Paralympics?
Yeah, I've been an Olympic junkie since I was just a little kid, so I've been watching all the Olympic games since I was a kid. So yeah, I definitely watched that Olympics, and you know, I competed in Torino in 2006, like I said too. So this was actually be my third games.
Okay.
I really enjoy watching the games before I go, so that you can kind of visualize a little bit more about. It's not such a surprise when you get there. You know, you kind of already have an idea what the venues look like and where you're going to be playing, and I've been doing the same thing this time. I've been watching a lot of the men and women's games to kind of see what the arena's like we're going to be playing in and what the village looks like. And it's good to get that visualization so it's not such a surprise when you get there.
Well, let's go back to that first Olympic Games then. What did it feel like going into that giant stadium that, of course, you had been watching on television for a couple of weeks?
It's an amazing experience. The opening ceremonies is actually the most overwhelming part of the whole thing. Having those sold out arenas where you go in with the whole Paralympic delegation, you know, everybody's wearing their opening ceremony clothing, and it's really something special. It's always sold out, and it's still just an amazing show, and it's really overwhelming.
You, of course, Kevin, this will be your first Olympic experience, although you've been competing on the world stage for a couple of years now. What are you most excited about in Sochi?
I think I'm most excited about, like, the atmosphere and the crowd, just because in our sport we don't get much of a crowd at our games and stuff like that. And this will make our team feel like we're, like, pros, I guess. Like, you're an NHLer and you get to play in front of a bunch of fans, and I'm really excited about that part.
Well, from what I've witnessed of the Paralympics, and of course you don't get to watch them on television, but all of the Olympians that are in the Paralympics are just as much athletes as the athletes that we are spending all of our time watching right now. Is it frustrating that you don't get a television audience and that people back home really have a hard time following as closely as we are able to with the Olympic Games?
I think it's grown a lot in the last couple of years. I mean, a lot of our games have been on like fasthockey.com, so the internet has really helped. And I believe this year NBC is showing 50 hours of the Paralympic Games, so that's going to be really good for the sport and for the Paralympics.
Andy, what do you want those of us who may not have witnessed this kind of competition to know about it going into the Paralympic Games in Sochi?
Well, I mean, I think what you had said earlier was really important, that they we have trained just as hard as the every athlete that's, you know, in the Paralympic or in the Olympics currently on TV. Those guys have all dedicated their lives to the sport, and they train every day for their sport. And we're no different than them. We're doing the same exact thing. We're training every day to represent Team USA and to try to bring home a gold medal just like they are. There's really no difference. Just a little different stage, and that's it. So,
well, there is one difference that I notice. And, you know, a lot of the Olympians that you hear their stories, and a lot of them have overcome amazing obstacles. But for Paralympians, every single one of you has had to overcome what most of us would consider an almost insurmountable obstacle. Does that make the stakes even higher, do you think, Andy?
I don't know if the stakes are higher. They're definitely, it may be more impressive that the athletes have not only have overcome their disability, but have gone on to do, to compete at such a high level, you know, to take on, you know, for disabled people to take on workouts that most able-bodied people wouldn't even want to take on is really impressive, to see what all these athletes can do. You know, they can do stuff that, you know, most able-bodied people wouldn't even want to think about doing. So
certainly,
it's really cool.
Andy, you already have a gold from Vancouver going into these games. Obviously, you're hoping to bring home another gold medal. Do you have a personal goal going into the games as well beyond that? Is there something that you want to prove to yourself?
No, the goal going into every one of these tournaments is to win it. There's no, you know, the personal goal may be to have fun while I'm doing it, but, you know, that's, I'm there to, it's an amazing experience to have. So to be able to experience it with my teammates and have a good time doing it and hopefully bring back that gold medal that's what I got going.
And how about you, for you, Kevin? I mean, getting to the Paralympics has been a goal in your life for so long, something you've been so focused on and working on for so many years. What does it mean to you to be going to Sochi?
Yeah, it's just like I said before, it's a dream come true, and I'm just there. I want to, you know, help the team as I can to win that gold, and like Andy said, we're going there to win it, so that's what we're there to do. It's our job is to give it our all, and that's what I'm going to do for the team.
All right, well, best of luck to both of you, and we will be watching.
Great, thank you.
Andy Yowie and Kevin McKee are headed to Sochi to compete in sled hockey at the Paralympic Games. You can see both of them and the rest of Team USA in the documentary Ice Warriors, USA Sled Hockey, that premieres on PBS on February 24th at 9 p.m. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, and sled hockey is just one of the adaptive sports that Iowans are participating in. Opportunities for disabled athletes in the state have been growing dramatically in the past few years, thanks in large part to Adaptive Sports Iowa. Mike Boone is the founder and director of the organization. He's with me now. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Now, before you came to Iowa, you were living in Colorado and you were a ski instructor. How did you get involved in adaptive sports?
Well, how much time do you have?
Give me the short story.
I was born and raised in Colorado. My father was blind as a result of type 1 diabetes. And just as a result of growing up around disability, I've just always kind of paid attention to it. In fact, sometimes my wife gets mad at me because we'll be at a retail store somewhere and she'll be trying on clothes and I'll be paying more attention to how close the racks are. can you get a wheelchair through there? And she'll kind of get mad at me for being a advocate sometimes. But disability has always just kind of been something I've paid attention to as a result of growing up with that. And then going to school down in Durango, Colorado at Fort Lewis College, I had the opportunity to work as a ski instructor for a disabled sports program out there. And that was my first exposure in adaptive sports, so to speak. We basically teaching people with disabilities how to ski. And it, being exposed to that, I was able to see firsthand how powerful the tool of sport and recreation can be for someone with a disability, and how just exposure to a sport for just a limited amount of time can legitimately change your whole perspective on life.
So what brought you to Iowa?
I was offered a graduate assistantship at Drake University, and I ended up meeting my wife, and I'm still here.
When a few years ago you decided to found Adaptive Sports Iowa, this mm-hmm. was in 2011. What was it that you saw and experienced in the state that made you think that this was a need that wasn't being met?
It was a glaring need, as we like to say. You have to understand, coming from a state like Colorado, there were probably 16 to 20 different disabled sports programs throughout the whole state. So when I moved to Iowa, I figured Iowa was similar to that because that was all I've ever seen. And upon graduating from grad school and really doing my research, I realized that there was literally no adaptive sports programs around the state. And you have to understand, when I say adaptive sports programs, our athletes, they all have a physical disability or a vision impairment, but from an intellectual standpoint, there's no disability. And from what I've realized after doing my research, just the infrastructure and the understanding from the public perspective of what disability is a pretty broad thing. You know, so when we want to say, I want to start adaptive sports, people would always naturally gravitate to, well, what does the Special Olympics do, which is a completely different organization altogether than the type of athlete that we're serving.
Well, there is a camp at the University of Northern Iowa, the Adapted Sports Camp. That's mm-hmm. been there since 2006. So it was a young program when you started, although I do need to give them credit because they certainly help a lot of athletes from around the state get experience with adaptive sports. But when you founded Adaptive Sports Iowa, what was your goal? Obviously to get a lot more athletes involved, but what were your hopes with working with communities?
Our goal is pretty simple. We want to improve quality of life, and we simply use the tool of sport and recreation to achieve that. And our goal was simply get people active. And I'm glad you actually mentioned the UNI Adaptive Sports Camp. Jack Erdman runs that camp, and he's been a great pioneer within the state with really getting programs up and running and really educating that population. What we're trying to do at Adaptive Sports Iowa is we want to create consistent opportunities. So this is where someone can be active on a weekly or biweekly basis in anything from wheelchair basketball to power soccer to cycling, any number of things. So we're really trying to really engage that population, get them active on a regular basis.
All right. So not a once a year camp, but an opportunity to actually get out there and participate on a regular basis. Are you trying to make this part of high school sports programs and college sports programs as well?
Without a doubt. Iowa, a lot of people don't realize this, but Iowa was the first state in the nation back in 1991 to actually integrate wheelchair sports within their track and field structure. We were the first one to actually have actual events. So the hard part's already done. Our main mission with that in terms of sports and in kind of a scholastic setting would be to help educate the coaches so they can be advocates, so they can reach out to these students in their schools.
That's so interesting. So are the track and field sports have been more accessible for longer and then the other sports lagged behind in this state? Is that your impression?
You know, it's adaptive sports on a national level is it's a technology that's developing, and it's an understanding that's developing. A lot of my job is just simply public education, both educating the public as a whole and also engaging the population with disabilities within the state. Because I meet people every single month who are living with a disability that have no idea what opportunities or technologies are out there to allow them to actually be living an active lifestyle.
Let's talk about some of the sports that people can participate in now. And you mentioned wheelchair basketball, and mm-hmm. that's your most popular sport?
Without a doubt. We started wheelchair basketball. It was the first program we started back in 2011. And now we get as many, anywhere between 10 to 18 people every single week in Ankeny to play 3 hours of basketball. We have all the equipment there on site. But we have a number of ongoing programs that go year-round, from wheelchair basketball to power soccer, which is an adapted version of soccer for people in power chairs. We have a couple of programs for people with vision impairments, goalball, which is a Paralympic sport, played in the winter, and then we also play beat baseball, which is an adapted version of baseball for the blind in the summertime. We're going to be starting up a track and field program this year. We organize the only RAGBRAI team that supports the athlete with physical disabilities. So we have a number of different programs throughout the year so people can be active.
We're going to take a short break. We're going to get back to this conversation in just a moment. I'm also going to bring Nick Bassett into the conversation. He's a student at DMAC, and he's been participating in adaptive sports for a number of years. Right now, I'm talking with Mike Boone, who is the founder and director of Adaptive Sports Iowa. And we want to hear from you as well this hour. Has your family been involved in adaptive sports? What new opportunities have come your way? What does it mean to you or to someone in your family to be able to participate in sports if they weren't before? Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page. And if you go to the Facebook page, you can also see a picture of that gold medal winning sled hockey team from the Vancouver Games. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about adaptive sports in Iowa. Earlier in the program, I was talking with a couple of Iowans who are on their way to the Paralympic Games to compete with Team USA in sled hockey. And now with me is Mike Boone. He is the founder and director of Adaptive Sports Iowa. And now joining the conversation is Nick Bassett. He is a student at DMAC, the Boone campus, and he's been participating in adaptive sports for many years. Hello, Nick.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming to the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to talk a little bit about your personal story. I know that you were born with a spinal cord tumor and then went on to have a lot of struggles with scoliosis.
Yes. My spinal cord tumor was found when I was 21 months old. My mom noticed I was sitting crooked in the bathtub, and she took me to the hospital later that week. And they noticed, and they took x-rays, and they noticed that I had scoliosis. And the doctor goes, but I'm going to want to take a look at your spine. So I had surgery later that month, and they noticed that, and they found that I had a spinal cord tumor, and they discovered that they did a biopsy on the tumor, and they found out it was a benign glioma, which is a non-cancerous tumor. So I was very thankful for that, but I've had that tumor infused with my spine all my life, and they've had several surgeries to remove it and try and remove it, and it's got a lot of voids now, but it's a lot better than it used to be.
You fought long and hard to continue to be able to walk, and then you finally ended up wheelchair bound when
yes.
you were in high school.
Yes, that was a very, very tough time in my life. I was battling with a lot of sickness then, because I was participating in my school's show choir, and I was noticing that my legs were getting weaker and weaker and weaker, and I was starting to get less feeling in my right leg. And I thought that was strange, but I didn't think much of it. And then I was hospitalized for a really bad urinary tract infection. My white cell count was 21,000, and that means you're really sick. And when I was in there, they found I had a pressure ulcer on my right hip. And I was in the hospital for the first 8 days of my summer coming out of my sophomore year of high school. And when I got out of the hospital, my legs had just became so weak that I just couldn't walk anymore.
Wow. Having gone through that, can you tell me when the first opportunity to participate in adaptive sports came around for you?
my first opportunity came around when I was the end of my junior year of high school, because, you know, I was still trying. I was battling with my pressure ulcer for a long time, because I couldn't do any lot of physical activity until it was healed. And at the end of my junior year, it was finally healed. And my track coach comes up to me and says, "Hey, Nick, you know there's you can do wheelchair track in high wheelchair track for our team, right?" And I go, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Well, awesome." He goes, "All you need to do is find yourself a track chair." And I go, "Well, I'll get right on that." And so I emailed a bunch of people and I looked around and I came across a man named Brad Waller, and he had a track chair for me, and he ended up donating that to me. And from then on, I trained throughout the summer, and I trained all the way through the winter until the spring of my senior year. And that's when I started doing track. And it was an awesome experience, and I loved every minute of it. Getting to try and beat my times, because with wheelchair track in high school, there's not a lot of athletes, for at least when I was in it. Because now there are a ton of athletes that race the track, but when I was in high school, there was only four people that raced at state, and so at district I was trying to beat my time, and. And there was one guy I did race at districts, but I can't remember. I ended up beating him, and I didn't see him at state. But he had qualifying time for state, and I was just so thankful that I got to be able to do that. And it was and because of wheelchair track, I got to meet a lot of the wheelchair athletes there, and that's where I met a boy named John Litzkow, and he introduced me to the United Adapted Sports Camp. And that's where I actually met Mike Boone.
All right. Well, what did that feel like to be able to get out there? I understand you're saying you had to compete against yourself a lot of the time. But what did it feel like to be able to get out there on the track and go as fast as you could and be out there with the other students?
It felt like freedom. I mean, I've been bound to my disability for a lot of my life. You know, I used to play some non-competitive type sports when I was a lot younger, and it just wasn't the same. And when I got out there on the track and I was able to compete against other athletes, it was the greatest feeling in the world. I mean, I came in third in state for the 100 and the 200 and the 400, and I didn't care that, you know, some people, "Oh man, I came in third. I'm so disappointed." I was just happy to be able to compete.
When you went to the Adapted Sports Camp at UNI, you met Mike Boone. And what other sports opened up to you at that point?
Well, when I went up to the sports camp, we played a whole bunch of sports while we were up there. We played tennis. We played wheelchair rugby. That was awesome. But I fell in love with wheelchair basketball. It's a big team sport, and I'm really into team sports. I got to try out my first hand cycle while I was up there, and it was probably 6 months to the day I rode my first hand cycle that I bought my first hand cycle, and that's my second love with Adaptive Sports Iowa is hand cycling, because that gives me a lot of freedom, because, you know, I was never able to ride a bike due to balance issues, and I get to finally ride bikes and get out on trails and stuff. So it's one of those amazing opportunities that that Adaptive Sports has offered to me.
Well, and you're actually training for RAGBRAI this summer, right?
Yes. I started my training yesterday. Got into the gym and for the first time in a couple months, and I'm pretty sore this morning.
So that racing wheelchair you got into in high school offered you a new kind of freedom, but it sounds like you've just found more.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'm so glad that Adaptive Sports Iowa has all these programs that I can get involved with and just stay active and try and better myself as a person physically and mentally.
Mike, I want to get back to you. You talked about wheelchair basketball in Ankeny, 10 to 18 people coming and playing every week. How accessible is it for people who want to play these adaptive sports? I mean, if I live in Davenport, is Ankeny the only place I can go and play wheelchair basketball?
Well, you kind of touched on the big issue that we have, so resources and being able to get out. Well, our Adaptive Sports Iowa is primarily around Central Iowa, just basically because of our resources. We don't have what we need to really start doing stuff all over the state, which is eventually what we want to do. That's a part of our business plan. Mm-hmm. There is a program out of Iowa City. Actually, they kind of service the Cedar Valley corridor, so to speak, with Sportability. But I mean, I'm not super connected with organizations like that. I mean, it's our main focus is we want to make sure that we can continue to do what we're doing, and then starting the other programs around the state.
So do you have people traveling from all over the state to get to Central Iowa to be able to participate in some of these things?
Yes, we do. We have at least one person every single week that drives 2 hours one way to play basketball. And usually about once a month, we'll have a few others that are driving multiple hours one way to play.
Well, that certainly speaks to how important that is for the individuals who can participate, although mm-hmm. it does also speak to the need. So in your goals for the future, you mentioned that you want to make it more accessible for people around the state. How are you going to be able to do that? What is the plan?
Well, to be honest, when we started this program in 2011, we didn't really have any idea how it was going to be received or what was going to need to happen. We just kind of knew that the pieces were in place and it just needed to provide some leadership. And last year we had just over 1,200 visits amongst all of our different programs. So we've got the information now to show that this is a program that can be successful, and the need is very obvious. So, I mean, the things we need right now is we need the resources, we need the equipment, we need the access to the facilities, and we just need, honestly, more money, so we can hire more staff, so we can continue to grow this awesome concept around the state.
I want to bring Heather on in Cedar Falls into the conversation now. And, of course, you can join us at 866-780-9100. Hi, Heather.
Yes.
Hi.
I'm here.
What would you like to talk about?
Hi. Oh, yeah. I had a quick comment and then a question. I'm a physical therapist, and I have a daughter with cerebral palsy. So I hear what Mike is saying. I felt like there has been a big need for adaptive sports in the area. And we this year have just started an adaptive kinder gym program at UNI. So, like, the kids kind of toddlers and preschool ages that can't participate in the traditional kinder gym come once a week, and it's just meant to kind of get them excited about moving and physical activity. So I guess my question was, is there some, like, what would be the next step? Is there anything out there for younger kids, like the early elementary age kids?
Mike?
Yeah. With our specific program, there's not a lot, and the reason for that is as we've developed our programs, basically we've gone to where the greatest need has been, and by far the most active population has been the adult population. Of the programs I know about, I know that there's an organization in Urbandale, Iowa called Courage League Sports, and they focus primarily on younger children with disabilities, and we actually partner with them for a program every Thursday night where it's basically like kid PE time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very in tune with what's going on around Central Iowa in terms of Cedar Rapids. I don't know. Did that kind of answer your question, or was there something more specific you want me to cover?
Yeah, no, that is no. And I know the kids that we've worked with and what we've been doing is kind of like an adapted PE. And I know that, like I said, I'm working with really little kids.
Right.
Here, but I know that we have a couple that would be interested in that kind of that wheelchair basketball stuff. I mean, they're like 5 years old, but I didn't know, like I said, if there were any programs out there like that for real little ones like that.
Well, Heather, how many kids do you have participating in your kinder gym? That sounds like a very exciting program.
Well, right now there's six. This is, like I said, the first year, but hopefully we're going to get more and more. And, yeah, try to, like I said, just get them excited about moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No. What I've found is when I'm connecting with the younger generations, just having the exposure to sport at such an early age is so vital. Just so they understand that, yeah, okay, so they have a disability, but that doesn't mean they can't live an active lifestyle. You know, one thing I've also found that's pretty powerful too is when you can connect some of those younger kids with adults that share the same disability, and they can physically see them playing basketball, playing, you know, riding in hand cycles and being active and all those kinds of things. The younger you can get them involved, the better it is going to pay out later on.
Nick, tell me, for you, obviously being able to participate in these sports has been very exciting for you and has given you a lot mm-hmm. of new freedom. What about the relationships that you develop because you're connecting with other people who have similar backgrounds?
Well, I'm the only person with scoliosis on the team, but, you know, we're pretty much everybody's that gets involved with Deaf Sports Iowa are wheelchair bound, you know. It's really nice to connect with people that, you know, we all share similar struggles, and we all share similar stories. So it's really nice to be able to get together and talk with people about that kind about what we've gone through. You know, we don't normally talk about it because, you know, when we're with each other, we're just normal people. But, you know, sometimes we'll talk about it, but we'll only touch on it. So it's really nice to just get around people that are like me and be, quote, normal for a day.
Well, I'm curious. You are somewhat fortunate in that you live in Central Iowa, so you have this access. Do you know other athletes who've moved to Central Iowa to be able to participate more freely?
I don't, but I know there's a lot of people that I know a lot of my friends that are in wheelchairs will travel to Ankeny as much as they can, because I mentioned John Litzkow earlier. He's a really good friend of mine. He travels to Ankeny to play basketball with us when he gets the chance. He's been wanting to join our ragbrag team for a while, but he's been busy with school. So I'm really trying to reach out to people that I meet through everything that I do, because I'm a part of the Iowa State Dance Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kids that there are kids around the 17, 16 age that don't know about adaptive sports, and I've been trying, and I get them involved with the adaptive sports. I give them the pamphlets and stuff that we have, and try and get them to come. And I know I successfully got one kid to come, but I try and be as much of an advocate for Mike as much as possible.
Well, Nick, that is so wonderful, and thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Nick Bassett is a student at DMAC at the Boone campus, and he's been participating in adaptive sports for a number of years. He lives near Boone. And Mike, before I let you go, you've got a couple of really big national events coming to Iowa in adaptive sports this summer, right?
We do. One of the things we're trying to do is we try to bring in those outside events so we can expose the local population to what's going on nationally. In early June, the first weekend in June, we are going to be hosting the National Goalball Championship. Basically, it's a Paralympic sport. We'll have about 20 teams coming in from all over the country. And then the first full week of July, we'll be hosting the National Junior Disability Championships. Both of these are going to be in Ames. And the NJDC is a 31-year-old event, never been to Iowa before. And it basically is for kids with ambulatory disabilities. And it includes track and field, archery, swimming, table tennis, cycling, and powerlifting.
Wow, that's exciting. You've also been instrumental in getting a number of adaptive sports included in the Iowa Games as well, right?
Correct. We are under the same umbrella as the Iowa Sports Foundation, so the Iowa Games, actually, we share an office with them, so we've been able to use that statewide infrastructure to integrate competitive sports statewide.
Terrific. Mike, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for your time.
Mike Boone is the founder and director of Adaptive Sports Iowa. And with me in the studio now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, coming up today at noon. What's on the show today, Ben?
Well, Charity, a couple times a year, we like to look at cases before the Iowa Supreme Court, listen to the stories behind the cases. That's always fascinating. And then hear the arguments, and then find out what implications they could have for us. And as a matter of fact, sometimes the nation, some cases being decided here. So we'll look at a case, for instance, that asks whether a third-party solar energy company can sell electricity directly to customers, or does that undercut our state's utility providers? It's a Dubuque case before the Supreme Court, but plenty of other cases to talk about, too.
Certainly.
Charity, at noon today.
All right. River to River coming up at noon with Ben Kiefer. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Storytelling with the Moth. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.